This is the Jeff Merrick Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Welcome back to the program. Still ahead from the studio in TNT land. Liam McHugh stops by, host of the NHL on TNT. We'll stop by. We'll talk about the playoffs as he sees it and that studio, and specifically the presence of Henrik Lundqvist and what he brings outside of rants about the reverse VH. And I'm wondering how that went over in the goalie community. That's a good question for Kevin Woodley, Steve Alakat, etc. Anyhow, in the meantime, a couple of game sixes tonight you can watch on Sportsnet. Early, it is the Florida Panthers facing off against the Boston Bruins. They're saying game time decision for Brad Marchand, but if you put on your Boston Bruins Dakota ring, 63's in. Come on. 7 o'clock Eastern is the start time there. Pregame at 6:30 Eastern, CBC and Sportsnet. The distribution also later, 10 o'clock Eastern on Sportsnet, you can see the Dallas Stars and the Colorado Avalanche, a series that when you watch it, you say to yourself, holy smokes, of all the series in these playoffs, this may be the fastest. Connor McGahee knows that. He's the Colorado Avalanche play-by-play voice, and he joins me now. Connor, how are you, pal?
Good, Jeff. Nice to talk to you. How are you today?
I am doing very well. And amongst things to discuss today, I mean, it's going to be sort of a rewind to a couple of days ago, but nonetheless, here we go. We could talk about Cale Makar. He was fantastic in Game 5. Nathan MacKinnon, ditto. Arturi Lehkonen is so important to this team. You know that a lot better than I do. But I want to get your thoughts on Jonathan Drouin. And not just Jonathan Drouin in the last game, which was probably his best game as a member of the Avalanche, at least from this chair, 24 minutes and all. But, you know, even just going back to when people like Nathan MacKinnon really stuck out his neck and said, look, we had something in Halifax. We won a Memorial Cup together. We are a part of the best line in junior hockey. I know that there's still something there. Like, people stuck their neck out to bring in Jonathan Drouin, and he's been one of the most improved players this season. When you go all the way back, Connor, to when you first heard his name around the Avalanche to right now, what have you seen?
I've seen somebody who committed to doing things the right way and wanting to get back to shaping himself to be a winning hockey player, because I think for many a reason things had gone off track in, I know he had some good offensive years in Tampa and even Montreal, but no one was ever talking about Jonathan Drouin as a defensive forward. And I can't tell you how many times this season, Jeff, that Jared Bednar has referred to Jonathan Drouin as he was our best defensive forward tonight. I mean, really, that's never been a talking point when it comes to Jonathan Drouin. So for him to come in and commit to the work and commit to doing things the right way in order to win and completely almost change the way that he plays the game of hockey, to me is most impressive. He was obviously the Avalanche's nominee for the Masterton Trophy, yep. which I still think that every team should just have their winner. Because there's so many good arguments for each. Mm-hmm. But for him to be in the place that he is, to set a new career high in points, that's impressive, yes. But again, I guess it's how he gets there. Mm-hmm. And he has been one of the Avalanche's most reliable forwards, and you can tell that he's loving to play the game again.
It's worked out great. Like, make no mistake about it. And do we look at the fact that not only is he thriving, but just the fact that he's there? Do we look at that and say, that is, I'll just be blunt. Is that the power of Nathan MacKinnon in this organization? That this is Nathan MacKinnon going to management saying, this can work, trust me.
Yeah, and I call him an auxiliary arm of the front office too, because it was in circles that during the 2022 trade deadline, MacKinnon had Andrew Cogliano in mind for an addition to this team, to come with a veteran presence and a guy who, again, we use the word commitment around here a lot. Nobody's more committed than Andrew Cogliano. You should see his pre and post game routines in order to prepare.
He's pro.
Absolute pro. You're absolutely right. So for Mason MacKinnon to see that as a possibility for Jonathan Drouin as well, and know that not only that Drouin could hold himself accountable, but Nathan could do that to him too, I think is sort of how it works from time to time. And obviously the final decision is with Chris McFarland, but there is some input that that obviously goes into that, and I yep. think that's, I mean, what an endorsement for Jonathan Drouin to know that Nathan McKinnon wanted you to come be a part of his bid to win another Stanley Cup.
Listen, I think it makes a lot of sense, and I think a lot of people have sort of wondered if these two would ever get together in their career, and it just, like, listen, I never want to wish ill on anybody in their career. We know things didn't work out with Montreal. We know the stresses that come along with being a French-Canadian hockey player playing in that market, and when things don't go well, how much you wear it, not just at the rink, but everywhere you go, and the stresses that are involved. But I think we always sort of wondered, okay, are the stars ever going to line up here for these two to recreate what they were able to do in junior hockey? And listen, so far it's been fantastic. Were you surprised at 24 minutes, though, in Game 5?
I don't think necessarily, because I think when, even though he was out until Game number 4 of the series, hadn't played in the playoffs yet, obviously, yeah. because he had that cut on his calf in Game 82 here at home versus the Oilers. You don't come back in until you're absolutely ready to go. And Jared Bednar is one of the best at gauging his players on if they can handle a certain amount of minutes or not. Mm-hmm. Is it out of necessity with the absence of Val Nichushkin? Yes. But also it's like, okay, is Drouin going tonight? Can he handle these kind of minutes in all right. situations? And the answer really was yes. So mm-hmm. at the end of the day, he's got two assists in both games since coming back. And like you said, absolutely made a difference in keeping the Avs alive and forcing a Game 6 here tonight.
You know, this is such a fascinating team. I mean, this is a Stanley Cup champion team, as we all know. But listen, it's also a collection of human beings with, you know, that go through the everyday, you know, stresses and feelings that everybody else goes through. And you mentioned Val Nichushkin a second ago. Do we look at Game 4 and say, okay, that was the game where you saw a bunch of confused human beings and human yeah. beings that, you know, didn't know what was happening. They get to the rink, there's the shock, and there's everyone's stunned. And, you know, Bednar talked about the guys were frozen. You know, there's so many times, like, I've never seen this Avalanche team, I don't know, what do we call it? Elevator practice, statue practice, kind of stand around and really didn't know what to do. And I looked at that and said, I think we all did. That is a team that's just stunned at what happened. But this is a really good hockey team, and this is a veteran hockey team, and this is a highly skilled hockey team, not just physically but mentally as well. Is it safe to say that we look at Game 4 and say, okay, they had their day to digest that. Unfortunately for them, it happened on a game day. But in Game 5, that was them saying, we've moved on.
Absolutely, and I said that, and I got the feeling of that even traveling the day after Game 4, is that even that, you know, 12, 13, 14, however many hours, 18 hours afterwards, you know, was enough time to catch your breath, because if they felt anywhere close to the way that we felt before, when we found out before Game 4, I mean, it's pure shell shock.
Yep.
Just not because of the repetitive nature of the news after it happened last year. But again, just because it's the player that is a key piece of your team and is leading in goals in the Stanley Cup playoffs at that point. So you think, you know, that Jonathan Drouin's coming back in that hockey game. So you're thinking, okay, we're plus one. We now have a full top nine. This team is going to play like it's supposed to play on paper. And then all of a sudden you're down the Nichushkin. Devon Taves is out six. So instead of being plus one on the night, you're minus two, when it comes to personnel. And I think that even the toughest of minds, and, most of these guys are, because they've been to the top, even the toughest of minds find it difficult to handle news, I think, of that nature and with that timing. So I said before Game number 5 in Dallas that, look, 36 plus hours is going to be enough for them to digest and look around and say, okay, now this is the group. This is going forward now, not going backwards. And that was the key to victory for the Avs, is, as it usually is, if they're on their toes, they win. If they're on their heels, they lose. And they were definitely on their toes in Game number 5.
Let me actually go back with you for one brief moment, to one brief game with one player. Listen, we've seen Georgiev turn things around, and I know that he's a player that, you know, he needs to get a lot of games and get the momentum and get the reps and all of it. He's that kind of goaltender. Do you look back at that first game against Winnipeg and say, what was that? because I'll be honest with you, Connor, I do. Like I still think about it now. Every time I watch the Avalanche, I'm like, who's in Georgiev's place here? Because it is such is two distinct goaltenders between game one in Winnipeg and what we've seen subsequent. It is two different guys.
Yeah, and you sort of have to go back, I think, the 2 or 3 weeks prior to that, Jeff, because the Avs weren't playing great hockey. They lost on home ice to Dallas here. They lost 7-0 to Winnipeg. Of course, everyone talked about that going into the series. So defensively, the Avs were also replaced by another actor, right? And I think Georgiev falls under that spell. There's so much talk around the league here in the city where everyone wants to ship Alexander Georgiev out of town. And again, even people who don't pay attention to much are going to hear that sort of noise. Mm-hmm. But I just got the feeling that in game two, the team and Georgiev knew that they had to work together. And they did, and they got the win. They won four straight. They won the series. And it's amazing, just sometimes an ultimatum in a way is what you need to get yourself back on track and be your best version here in the Stanley Cup playoffs. And I think that's what happened between game number one in that Winnipeg series and game number two, because, I mean, you talked about it with Corey a couple weeks ago, Corey Mastrosek. And you go back to the Ken Dryden situation. That's exactly what it was, because Jussi Saarinen is sick and is not able to go in. So Georgiev gets a shot and he's able to have a great game, get a win, and really hang on to the job and continue to be the guy.
I really appreciate how you indulge me in my strained analogies going back to 1979 and the Montreal Canadiens and the New York Rangers, and Doug Risebrough floats one. It's Bunny LaRocque and warm up, and so he's not going to start, and Dryden's back in for game two, and they end up dusting the Rangers. Ah, bless you, Connor. You made me smile. Thank you, my friend. Let me
have a good analogy. I thought it was fantastic.
I've just watched too many hockey games. That's all. I gotta get this out of my head. So
don't we all?
Amen, brother. So let me ask you about. Get a couple of minutes left with you here. Let me ask you about coaches. Let me ask you about Bednar and how he talks to his team and how he gets his team ready. And with Pete DeBoer, like, there's one thing that DeBoer does that we saw with a team like, here's comes another strange analogy, the Islanders. You know, I remember Glenn Healy telling me the story before the Islanders in 1993 knocked out the Pittsburgh Penguins. Before that final game, Al Arbor went around the room and said to every single player, can you stop Mario Lemieux on one shift? Yes, I can. Next player. Can you stop Mario Lemieux on one shift? Yes, I can. Next player. Can you? And all the way around the room. And had the whole team believing and saying it just by verbalizing it in front of everybody else that they could each stop Mario Lemieux on one shift. Now, the thing about Pete DeBoer is, and listen, you see this with ice time. Like, forwards don't get into the 20s, but no one on, like, line four is in single digits. Like, they roll. And he has everybody on that team believing they can play against anybody else on any team. What is, like, how does Jared Bednar handle his team? Because that's how DeBoer does it, and that's right from the pages of Al Arbor. How does Jared Bednar do it?
Yeah, and it's definitely different with the forwards for Dallas than it is the defensemen, right?
Yes.
I mean, Nils Lundqvist is lucky if he gets two shifts a game, I feel like. But I remember that we were in Edmonton, this is March maybe late February, I don't know. It was the first of two trips to Edmonton this year. And or maybe it was just after an Edmonton game, and the Avalanche had won. And I remember asking him in an interview the next game about pretty much keeping Draisaitl and McDavid off the score sheet. And he said, I feel good about with this lineup putting anybody up against anybody else. And obviously we're going to have some star power numbers when it comes to ice time with MacKinnon and Rantanen and McCarr and Taves. And that's just going to happen because that's the type of players they are. And you're going to put your guys on the ice, especially if you see an opening and an opportunity. But when it comes to the defensive side of the puck, he said, I feel comfortable putting any of our guys up against anybody, and that includes McDavid and Draisaitl. So I think that Jared Bednar has the full scope team approach when it comes to that, you know, maybe the matchup in the first round series from a Winnipeg point of view was talked about and chased a little bit too much, and the Avalanche just went out and played, and that's what got them the win. And I think that when they're in that mindset, it gets production from every single line, but more importantly, it puts everybody in a place where, okay, the top line has to defend like the second line like the third mm-hmm. line like the fourth, and that's what gets you a team victory. So I think the approaches from that point of view are definitely similar.
All right, Avalanche ride like the wind tonight, facing off against the Dallas Stars. It is game 6, 10 o'clock Eastern. Watch it on Sportsnet. You knew I was going to get one in. And Sportsnet 1,
oh,
Connor.
Oh, that was nicely done. Thank you. I am honored.
I love that song. So good. Thanks so much, as always. Enjoy game 6 tonight. Fingers crossed, because I want all these series to go 7 because they've been so good. We get a 7-gamer out of this one. Thanks so much, Connor, as always.
You bet, Jeff. Thanks for calling.
Connor McGehee is the Avalanche play-by-play voice. Tonight it is game 6. The Stars look to close out. The Avalanche look to extend. They're at home at Ball Arena. Watch that one. 10 o'clock Eastern on Sportsnet and Sportsnet 1. Time now for Line Change, presented by Sports Interaction, your homegrown sportsbook. Bet local. And we have a look forward to Saturday. And are you going all Canadian here, Matty?
Yes, sir. Canucks at Oilers. We project that the Oilers are going to be favored by -1.5. So 10 of the last 11 Oilers games have been decided by one goal.
Mm-hmm.
And as we know, every game in this series has been decided by one goal.
Yeah.
I'm really hoping that they can make some history, get this thing to 7, and another 7. One goal.
Yeah.
You said you would start Stuart Skinner in this.
There's no one that knows Stuart Skinner better than the organization. This is the only caveat I have here. If Knobloch, the players, everybody in the organization, if you have the feeling that he is, well, first of all, he's rested. And so that might be a factor here with Pickard to begin with. But if he's rested and pissed off enough to have a great performance, because we have seen great performances from Skinner before.
Mm-hmm.
I know the numbers haven't been great.
That would be putting it lightly. Yes.
I understand that. I understand that. That would be the way that I am leaning. Again, this is going to come down to Chris Knobloch's gut. And who he believes he can win with.
This is why.
What would you do?
I would go back to Pickard, honestly.
Just no faith in Skinner whatsoever?
Just not what I've seen. And the history against Vancouver is just not good.
Saturday's game, though, is going to be about one player for me. Connor McDavid.
I was going to say 97.
Connor McDavid. Do you not get the feeling that we're close to a signature game from one of the best players, maybe the best player in the entire NHL?
And if you don't get it, people are going to start going, what happened here?
Tell you what, man, if Vancouver ends it on Saturday, a whole bunch of questions here on this program on Monday. That's the understanding.
Looking forward to it.
You and me both. It's going to be a great game. That's Line Change, presented by Sports Interaction, your homegrown sportsbook. Bet local. Liam McHugh from the NHL on TNT is next.
In-depth Blue Jays coverage with an analytical twist. Jays Talk Plus with Blake Murphy. Be sure to subscribe and download Jays Talk on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. This is the Jeff Merrick Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Welcome back to the program here Monday to Friday, noon Eastern, 9 Pacific. Across the Sportsnet Radio Network, simulcast on 360. And if you're downloading the podcast, thank you, thank you, thank you. Much appreciated. Coming up, we're standing by for Liam McHugh, the host of the NHL on TNT, who will join here in a couple of moments. Want to remind you as well, busy night tonight around Sportsnet with a couple of big games on the go, 7 o'clock Eastern. The Florida Panthers and the Boston Bruins. Interesting note from Paul Maurice when he was asked about Brad Marchand's comments about we're out there to hurt everybody. He said, if that were true, the referees would have everybody in the box within the first 10 minutes. But having said so, you're shaking your head, Matty. I'm with you. Like, of course you're hitting for keeps. Of course you're hitting to hurt. No one hurts. But this way, no one said, I wanted to get out there and tickle them.
Yeah,
now you're out there to hit the hurt.
That's not happening.
You're hitting to hurt. Anyhow, Panthers and Bruins, 7 o'clock Eastern on Sportsnet and CBC. Late game, the Dallas Stars, Colorado Avalanche, 10 o'clock Eastern on Sportsnet and Sportsnet 1. Pleased to be joined once again by Liam McHugh, studio host for the NHL on TNT. Liam, how are you today, pal?
I'm doing great, man. Awesome time of year. Nothing but drama, storylines.
Yes.
Marchand's mom getting interviewed. It's fantastic.
Well, I'll tell you what. You know, it's interesting because the first thing that everyone points out about this year specific as opposed to other years, and I'm saying this is a good thing. You know, I know the league likes to project, like, you know, this is hockey. It's not a soap opera. Liam, the whole season's been a soap opera. Like, every week it's been a different chapter. It's been a different story. There's new characters coming in and, you know, storylines rise and then they dissolve and then they come back again. And that's carried right through into the playoffs. Before we get into anything that's happening right now, how would you characterize this season in hockey? And would you call it anything other than a soap opera?
No, it's 100% that. It feels very much like a scripted drama.
Yeah.
And I mean that in the best possible way.
Mm-hmm.
Right? You know, because I think you do have the one thing about soap operas, though, is it has an ebb and a flow and a natural state. And I think people enjoy watching them because they kind of know there's a villain and a hero and there's people that you kind of understand how it's going to start and finish.
Yeah.
And what I love about what we have right now in the NHL is it feels like a scripted drama, but there are twists and turns.
Yeah.
And there are characters emerging every single day. And I think what's really great about this is the personalities are driving it. And we're seeing that a lot, especially in the Boston, Florida series.
Yes.
Where even our coaches are becoming these major personalities, where people who, especially in the States, aren't necessarily enormous hockey fans, but are big sports fans, are glued to the series and then glued to the post game.
Yeah.
They want to hear what these guys have to say because they know it's fuel for the fire going forward.
Yep.
And it's almost like that little teaser in a scripted drama where you can now look ahead to the next episode.
Paul Maurice is must-watch television. Paul Maurice is like a media protein shake after every single game. And that presser two nights ago was an all-time, like, you know what he's doing, right? His team just lost and et cetera. It's like, okay, I'm going to give you a press conference for the ages here. Like, I'll tell you, like, I know Paul more than a little bit. Back when I was working in the American Hockey League, he was the coach of the Marlies. And so I spent a lot of time around the rink. Like, a lot of these things that I hear out of Paul, like, this is right out of a textbook that he's had for years. But it's like a masterclass. You're just watching this guy work. And you're saying to yourself, like, this is as close to press conference perfection and also sort of distract. Let's get away from the game. Let's take everything away from the game here and an eyes on the next game. And that was Paul. Like, we've seen Paul go into press conferences looking for a fight. But a couple of nights ago, he was out there looking to distract away from the game. Those were some thorough and entertaining answers that Paul Maurice gives. And I've maintained this from day one about Paul, one of the most thoughtful, entertaining coaches we have in the NHL. And Liam, I defy you to find someone who has a better deadpan than Paul Maurice. If that person exists in the NHL, Liam, I haven't seen it.
No, he's a performer. I mean, yeah. And he has done that. It is theater. It's must watch, as you mentioned. The delivery is as good as the message.
Yeah.
He is dry. And then at the same time, you know, a moment later, he can be over the top as he was on the bench. I think he is the perfect guy to lead this team, which is a team of characters that's playing hard and getting in your face.
Mm-hmm.
And he knows when to push that button at exactly the right time. And then he knows when in the press conference that it's like Mad Men, where if you don't like what people are saying about you, change the subject. And he does that, but he does it in a way that's so thoroughly entertaining and compelling that you're as a media member distracted by it. You're now talking about what he's talking about, not the question that maybe he didn't answer.
Yeah.
It's because it's more entertaining. It's more interesting. And you're right. He is putting on a masterclass every single time he is in there. And I don't know. I can't get enough of it. And I have to say, I was surprised that Jim Montgomery, he upped his game and his performance game because few people are putting on a show like he did behind the bench the other night where he's miming full penalties that weren't called.
I was waiting, Liam, for him to put on a snorkel and flippers. Like, I really was. Like, okay, now we're going to get into prop comedy here. Like, it's like Carrot Top. All of a sudden, like, Jim Montgomery's pulling out all the props here. But he's been great. Like, this, the whole series is sort of, I mean, this whole thing is personality-based, right? Like, and we still, the thing about it is, we still haven't heard from Matthew Tkachuk in this thing. Like there hasn't been like, Liam, there hasn't been like the signature Matthew Tkachuk game or moment or something. And he might be the most dynamic out of anyone on both these two teams.
Oh, easily. I mean, that's the funny thing. This could now turn into that. This series could switch. Tkachuk could come out. He could have a big game. He could have an impact on this.
Yeah.
And he could tell you all about it during the game and then after the game. And it can be flipped and it can be all we're talking about. You're right. I mean, you go into the series like this, and I know, you know, when we're doing our broadcast, and I'm sure it's similar for you, you're talking about who you'd like to talk to before a game, who you want to talk to after a game. And if you put it out there beforehand, you're thinking Matthew Tkachuk.
Always.
Because he says what's on his mind. He doesn't mind that he's in, you know, the center of attention and that he'll be the mouthpiece for this team. And he doesn't mind if he offends people a little bit along the way. He is who he is. He's going to let you know what's on his mind. Yet, he has not been the story.
Yeah, really
at all. Everyone else has taken that away. And I think there's a good chance that we're going to see. We're going to get back to Matthew Tkachuk being the center of all this, because I do like Florida eventually to win this series.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he is a guy who is he is driven. He is determined. And what I do love about it as a media member is he is not quietly driven or determined. He is in your face. I'm excited, really, to see what he has over the next, you know, tomorrow and then potentially beyond that.
Yeah, you and me both. Let me get your thoughts on 63 in Boston here. And, you know, Brad Marchand, even when he's not playing, he's still the center of attention. And I looked at this yesterday as a breath of fresh air, because you never hear players admit this. We always hear players talk about, you know, a lot of respect for the other team and don't want to see anybody get hurt and really hope he's okay, blah, 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 et cetera. Then Brad Marchand just flat out comes out and says, oh, yeah, we're trying to hurt people out there. Like, make no mistake about it. When I hit someone, I want to hurt them, want to get them out of the game. To me, that's an absolute breath of fresh air. Now, today, Paul Maurice threw a sort of wet blanket and said, like, yeah, it's not going to happen or else the officials will fill the penalty box. But just, like, the phenomenon of Brad Marchand. Like, here's a guy, like, love him or hate him, and there are plenty of people that hate him, make no mistake about it, he's going to the Hall of Fame. And he's someone who's gotten plenty of heart votes along the way. He's been on my ballot a couple of different times as well. Not that I'm the be-all and end-all of voting. But highly skilled, captain of a highly prestigious team, has had a reputation that he will never shake. He still gets, the licking mimes like that. That still happens from other players. Do you have a thought on the phenomenon of Brad Marchand, either the player, the personality, the antics, the captaincy, the evolution from 2011? Just a thought on Brad Marchand, Liam.
I think right now he is one of the most self-aware athletes I've ever encountered. Listen, we spoke to Sam Bennett after he returned and after the video emerged showing what clearly happened. Mm-hmm. And listen, credit Sam Bennett for coming on with us and talking about the hit. I would not call it the most self-aware interview I've ever been a part of. It felt very much like Sam Bennett was perfectly playing the role of his own lawyer. Brad Marchand knows who he is. He knows what his backstory is. He knows how he played the game years ago, how he plays it now. And he is not going to come out there and tell you, like, oh, that's a dirty hit and I'd never be a part of it and we have to get out of the game. He knows.
Yeah.
Like, the internet exists. You can YouTube. People have memories. I am who I am. And I think when you're that self-aware and you're that comfortable with who you are and what you've done, you're honest and you're out front. And I love that about him. And I think he's beloved in Boston to the place where you've gone from Chara to Bergeron to Brad Marchand. But I think, unlike Chara and Bergeron, the people of Boston see themselves in Brad Marchand. And he knows that. And if he takes the ice tonight, you're going to see it's like Big Poppy in Boston giving a speech.
Yeah.
It will be that level. I love him as an interview because I think he is that guy. He can have fun. He can be loose. But he's also a guy that is well aware of what's happening in the moment and is honest about it. And I don't know. I love that about him.
With Liam McHugh, studio host, NHL on TNT, I want to ask you about Henrik Lundqvist. Now, you know, Elliot's made the point, and I agree with him, that, you know, the most influential and most powerful media member in hockey media is Paul Bissonnette. Full stop, hands down. I'm fascinated with Henrik Lundqvist on this panel. And the conversation about the reverse VH and, you know, the scourge of the NHL, like, I've looked at it and thought about the points that he's making, and a lot of it makes sense to me. And who's anybody to argue against Henrik Lundqvist about goaltending? Can you take us back to the genesis of that conversation? Like, I'm always fascinated, you know, watching hockey games with hockey players. Like, we're in a unique position. You know, we never played in the NHL, Liam, but we get to sit next to people and watch them talk about the game, right? Like, I remember working with Adam Oates and watching him watch old Gretzky videos. And I still think there's a show in there called Watching Gretzky, where all Adam Oates does is just comment on every single Wayne Gretzky game, because it is so compelling because he's got those same kinds of eyes. But can you take us back to the genesis of, you know, the all the vitriol that Henrik Lundqvist has about the reverse VH and how everyone's using it much to their own detriment sometimes?
Watching a game with Henrik Lundqvist is one of the great joys of this job. He is very much this composed, distinguished, intelligent, and calm presence. Mm-hmm. And we love that. And trust me, as you mentioned, Paul Bissonnette, who I love working with, we need that balance.
Sure.
But he also has these moments where if he sees something that bothers him, he has an instant reaction. And he's had moments like that. And even moments, which is strange to me, where I see a goalie making a bunch of great saves, he has moments where he will quickly say, he's all over the place. He is not, this is not as magical as you think. He is in the wrong position. That's why he is looking so athletic and acrobatic out there. But with the reverse VH, especially recently, and I think it's because he is a goalie that wants to keep getting better and learn and keep developing, which I love because there are rules for goaltending, but he thinks they're situational and you have to learn from those. And right now, the way players are sniping and seeing goalies go down and leave that window open and lean forward, you now have to counter that. Mm-hmm. He also, and I'll say this, he is a Hall of Fame goalie. And I think when you watch things with Hall of Famers, as opposed to everyday players, Hall of Famers do not believe that rules are hard and fast. Rules are made to be broken in certain spots. Regular players trust the rules. Lundqvist sits there and thinks, yeah, this is a rule, but in this situation, I need to get up on my feet and basically give the five hole and lure that shot in from that area instead of that upper corner, because I know if I do that, they'll shoot at five hole, I'll go down, I'll save it. I don't know that a regular goalie can process it at the speed that Henrik Lundqvist can process it and make that save. So it's always funny to me to watch Hall of Famers get angry about things like that. It's like when Biz is out there saying, in this play, you have to pass off the pads to your teammate so that he can score the goal, and have Gretzky in the same room saying, why in the world would I pass off someone's pads when I can just put the puck in the net? That's the worst play in hockey. So it's fun. It's educational. But I think it's also one of those things where if you are, and it's fine, we say regular player, regular professional athlete,
yes,
you may not be able to follow the rules of Henrik Lundqvist.
I love that. Rules. Temporary staging posts for the elites. That's all they are, just temporary staging posts. Remember, you know, to your point about, you know, passing off the pad, on the 32 pod, Elliot and I talked to Jordan Eberle a few years ago, and we went back to, like, that first goal that he scored. And it was like the end-to-end, you know, dangles defenseman. It's against the Calgary Flames, hockey in Canada, Saturday night. And we're walking through it with him. And he goes, yeah, you know, I've been in the league long enough now that I'll probably just come down the wing and just fire it off the far pad looking for a rebound. I wouldn't even try that move anymore. So I kind of know what you're getting at here. You know, the Gretzky presence is interesting, too. And I'll share something with you that Marty McSorley told me. I continue to be fascinated, as I'm sure you are, as well, about Wayne Gretzky and how he saw the game and thought of the game. And just, like, I don't even know that we've unlocked anywhere near everything that's in Wayne Gretzky's head. But Marty McSorley said something to me that was fascinating about Gretzky, and I've never forgotten it. It was after a show, and we're out having dinner, and we're talking about Wayne, and he said, you know, Wayne always hated skating along the benches. I said, what do you mean? He said, it's one of the rarest pictures you can find in hockey, a picture of Wayne Gretzky skating along the benches. He liked to stay away from the benches. And I said, why is that? And he said, Wayne didn't want to be surprised. He wanted to know exactly who was coming off and going on at the same time. And if he was beside the bench, someone could have a change behind him. And he didn't want that. He always stayed away because he, as this, you know, as this chess player, wanted to know where everybody was at the same time. Liam, now when I watch old Oilers games, I can't stop looking for Gretzky, getting himself off of the boards so he can see everything around him. How many of those moments have you had with Wayne Gretzky where you're just like, okay, like we're not in Kansas anymore, total. Like this is a totally different way to look at the game here.
I go back to early on with him, and you know, we're just feeling each other out, especially broadcast wise, and he's new to it. And you want him to be comfortable, but you want to get the most out of him. And fairly early on, I said, you know, hey, we're going to start with you on this segment, and just want to get your thoughts on this quickly. And he said, he's like, I don't really start. And I said, okay. And he said, no, that's kind of my whole career. He's like, I'm not big time. And he's like, I like to be on the bench to start because, and I think it's for that similar reason where it's, you know, there's some unpredictability if you start. But if you're on the bench and you get a quick look at the flow and you take the ice during that flow, he's at an advantage. Hmm. And I think that's the way Gretz lives his life. I think there's great, obviously greatest skill, but his mind works differently.
Yeah.
And he is putting himself in a position at all times where he can be the best possible version of himself.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a pretty cool way to live any life, right?
Sure.
And the fact that he kind of lives that every day is and lives that in a way that's enjoyable, not obnoxious, because he's selfless. He's a great teammate. And I think what he wants to do is he wants to teach other people,
mm-hmm.
like, that this is the way we do things. I would also say this. The other thing about Wayne, which and he's always studying, always looking, his memory and his recall are incredibly detailed. And it's not just games. It is the conversations. It's the locker room. It's the details. It's the word-by-word description of stories from the locker room, from the road. And I think that's one of those things, like the skill, like everything else, you can't teach. And I think, you know, we see it sometimes with McDavid where we don't understand why someone who could go that fast could process information while going that fast.
Yeah.
Gretzky is calmly and quietly just processing everything. And I don't even know if he knows that he's doing it,
mm-hmm.
but that's why he's, you know, basically a god. And the rest of us are just really happy to be around him.
You know, that is a wonderful story and reminder about how, you know, Wayne is as much as he's like singularly the best talent the game has ever seen, he's still a team guy. You know, like Kelly Rudy told me this one story when they're playing with the Los Angeles Kings, and they had just an awful game. I think Robbie Fatorik was the coach, and Fatorik came in and tore a strip off of everybody in the room except for Wayne. And then at the end of the rant, when Fatorik was leaving, he stood up and said, hang on a second here. I was awful out there. Why didn't you rip me too? I was as bad as everybody else was. I'm just a member of this team. I'm not Wayne Gretzky, some superstar. Why don't you rip me too? I was awful out there tonight. Let me close on this one. We talked about Florida and the Boston Bruins. What other, and maybe it's Vancouver, and man, what a game that was last night. What other series? I mean, they're all good, but which one really holds your interest here, Liam? We'll end on that.
Listen, I mean, I'm locked into all of them, but obviously the Vancouver Edmonton series is a special place because, listen, Rick Tocch worked with us. I love Tocch. He's a great guy. He is a smart hockey man. He is a leader, a great communicator, and we're seeing all of that.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm still blown away by what I'm seeing on the ice, but I will leave you with this. You know, I think he's the coach of the year. I think he's a great communicator, as I said before. But when we worked together that first year, we had a good show and people liked it and we got a lot of compliments. And it's a great thing to hear. It's a great thing to feel. Tocch called me that summer and he said, that's all great, but what are we going to do now? Because now the audience is going to want more.
Mm.
And he's like, that doesn't mean us being more over the top because we got to be better. How do you want to go about this? And this was like a week or two into break, you know, like us being off the air.
Right.
And he did it in a nice way. It was a great conversation, but he was a guy who was probably in the mix for coaching jobs.
Yep.
Wanted to know how can we improve? And it started to get the ball rolling and we started working on things. And I think that's why you're seeing success there, because he is constantly of the mind that this is great, but there are ways to get better. There are ways to improve it. Let's at least start considering them, thinking about them, and then implementing them. And you're seeing it with that team, and it's been a joy to watch.
Are you as impressed as a lot of us are at how restrained, and it's obvious, restrained Rick Tocchet has been? Like, there's that great visual from last night. Adam Ford is just barking at the official, and Tockett's giving him the highs. I'm like, no, stop. How restrained he's been towards the officials in this series.
I am remarkably impressed. I'm almost wondering if, like, right after the game, he goes down to some basement, just starts pounding a punching bag or something. Because I know there's, like, he's still that guy, like, if you throw it on YouTube right now, who's just out there, you know, rock'em sock'em robots throwing down. He still has that rage. He still has that, that sort of fire deep inside of him. But I think he's also gotten to the point, and he says he talks to Gretzky quite a bit, talks to a bunch of his old teammates, talks to Craig Berube, talks to different coaching mentors. And I think that's part of it. And he knows, all right, that's not going to help in the moment. But, man, there's got to be some sort of crazy, you know, Rod Brind'Amour type workout happening after this for him to get all that out. So it's been fun to watch.
He's got the heavy bag, and it's like the Rocky training, you know, catch the chicken, Rick. And he's here in the back of my mind. He's getting his frustrations out. Liam, you're very generous with your time. Thanks, as always, for stopping by. Much appreciated. Continued success through the Stanley Cup playoffs.
Great chat with you. Thanks so much.
Be well. Liam McHugh is the studio host for the NHL on TNT. We thank him for his time today. Matt Marchese.
Yes.
When I say Wayne Gretzky, what comes to your mind right away?
Do you want me to tell the Wayne Gretzky story?
You have a good one?
Yeah, it was pretty good. So we were just in this building here where we're working. We used to work out of a small little room, and we got to see a bunch of people walk by. They were in for meetings, whatever. Yeah. So one day, it was just like any other day, we called a bunch of suits walk by.
Yep.
Look up, and they're just like, oh, whatever. Yeah. It's just another day. Yeah. And then one of them wanders into our room, and it was myself and a former producer here, Travis McKenzie.
I miss Travis. He was great.
Travis was the best. Well, he had to put up with Jeff Blair, so, I mean, that is, you get canonized for that.
You had to do McCowan.
No. You get canonized for producing for Jeff Blair. But we're sitting there, and some guy just walks in the room and goes, oh, so this is where the magic happens. And we're kind of just like, what? Who is this bothering us? Like, we're working here.
And it was Wayne?
And when we just look up, and it's Wayne Gretzky.
Oh, my God.
And we're just like, blah, 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 blah. So we started talking. We started talking about how he was a Tigers fan growing up. No, nothing about hockey.
Huge baseball fan.
So we just started talking, and it was just like, what, like Liam talked about, he's just a good team. Like, he was just happy to have a conversation with us, which was really cool because we're talking about the greatest player in hockey history.
I know, and you're just like sitting there having a casual conversation. And hey, remember Mark the Bird Fidrich?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, of course.
It was just really cool. Just that it was, you know what it was, Jeff? It was very human. Yeah. And sometimes, you know, maybe less so in this business because we deal with it, but like fans who see Wayne Gretzky, they're like superhuman. They're like, he's, you know, the greatest ever. And you get kind of caught up in that and forget, like, just he's a human being who does something at a very supernatural level, right? And that's where having that conversation with him, and it wasn't for very long. It was maybe 10 minutes, but it was just really cool. And you're just kind of sitting there in awe. And then it's like, I'm having a conversation with Wayne Gretzky about baseball.
Is it like waking up in the morning and discovering that your neighbor is Spider-Man?
Probably pretty close to it. I mean,
living next to a superhero. Yeah, this is crazy.
This is pretty cool. You find that, though, in this business. There are a lot of people like that where it's just, you know, they also understand their place, but they also understand, like, they're human, too.
Yeah.
And they're like the rest of us who do things at a pretty incredible level.
I think I've mentioned it before here on the program. I just mentioned it to Liam McHugh. I really do think that there is a show, either television, online, whatever. There is a show in Adam Oates narrating Wayne Gretzky games.
Yeah.
Because when Adam and I have, I could talk to Adam forever. One of the most interesting things I've ever been part of in hockey, like, we're lucky we get to watch games with NHLers. There is nothing like it. And any chance that you get, you're listening, you're watching, any chance that you get to watch a hockey game with an NHLer, take it. because it is fascinating. And everyone has a different perspective, and you will learn a ton about the game, obviously. But when we worked with Adam Oates, there'd be a number of times where just pop open a laptop and fire up an old Edmonton Oilers game. And Adam would sit there and say, this is what Gretzky's thinking here. This is what Gretzky's going to do. This is what he's thinking here. This is why he's doing this. This is the trap that he's setting up here right now. And watch, this is where the defenseman's going to bite. And this is where all these...
Your jaw just drops.
It's stunning.
Yeah.
Like, I want to do a show with Adam Oates called Watching Gretzky.
Yeah. I mean, watching anybody with Adam Oates.
Gretzky's the best.
Yeah.
Like, that's like...
How about watching Adam Oates with Adam Oates?
Well, I mean, a lot of it is, and you know what, because I've asked him about that too. He's like, oh yeah, I stole that from Gretzky. Oh yeah, this would be behind it. This is totally Gretzky. This is how I'm studying it. No, this is totally Gretzky.
Adam is very much a student of the game. Actually, we still have the clip talking about Connor Bedard. Do you want to play that?
We still have it? Yeah,
we still have it. Okay, let's run this clip.
Is this from Manny Strickland?
Yeah, it's from the Cam and Strick podcast. It's Adam Oates talking about Connor Bedard and the, you know, protecting himself. And it's a very fascinating.
Let me guess, sticks too long.
Why don't we listen to the clip?
Here we go. Let me ask you about Bedard. I mean, he's a very popular guy. People always watch him all year. He's highlight reels, this, that, and the other. But, like, what would you say to him that he needs to fix?
Did you see when he broke his jaw?
Yes. Head up his ass kind of ordeal?
Mm-hmm. He ran right into him.
Bobbled the puck.
At the blue line.
Yes. He bobbled the puck in a spot on the ice. You're not allowed to bobble the puck. So my question to him would be, why? Now, is that a one-time accident? Of course it could be. So if he called me, I would watch enough video because I already know what I think it is. But he's a very young man. I would have to prove it to him, right? And I would look for other situations where, like, I know when he came back a few games, there was a game in Phoenix. He got thrown into the boards on a play that I didn't think he should have been thrown into a boards. He should have seen that D coming, and he didn't.
He gets absolutely crushed.
Yep.
I mean, he gets hit more than anybody in the league, hard. He's a smaller guy, and he's 18,
I think someone said that there had to be 10 fights for him this year.
Yeah. Big Nicky Foligno.
Yeah.
Yeah. Guys had to jump in and all that. So for me personally, I think it's six too long.
Mm-hmm. Okay. What do you make out of stick flex? Is it all about the length of the stick, the blade, or do you focus on the flex too?
Flex becomes irrelevant, right? But when you change a guy's stick, the flex will be a little different feel for him. But, like, to me, it's length, lie, curve.
How long should the stick be?
You have the right curve and the right lie, it will automatically show up because it's his posture. It will affect his posture instantly.
So this is, man, I've talked to Adam so many different times about sticks. I haven't talked to him specifically about Bedard, but hearing him talk to Cam Jansen and Andy Strickland, I'm guessing the length of the stick is too long because he always finds himself falling into the play, falling into the puck. And that's what happened on that play where he came over the blue line and got his jaw broken. The other thing that Adam will talk about a lot is, well, first of all, his basic concept for training hockey players, and folks, he trains the elite, like Jack Eichel, Mark Scheifele. He trained Nick Suzuki, like
Nikita Kucherov,
really high end skill players. And it's his belief that if you play the game properly, you should never get hurt. Now, I know that may fly in the face of common wisdom about hockey,
yeah,
because of how. But Adam is like, he is like absolute about this. He always maintains you can learn how to protect yourself out there and not get hurt. This is a skill, like shooting, like passing, like all of it.
Yeah.
You can play hockey so you don't get... Remember we had Scheifele on?
Yes.
And Scheifele talked about, you know, did you get... Oh, maybe it was on the podcast.
I think it was on the podcast. Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, when he got hit in the memory game against Minnesota, I said, did you get a text from Adam about that? He goes, yeah, I woke up the next morning and already there were the texts. And I had sent Adam something, you know, the night before, like, I know I screwed up there because he wasn't putting himself in a position to not get hit. But Adam's predisposition is you should be able to play hockey, even at the NHL level, and not get hurt, even though there's five other 200-pound men chasing you around the rink to hurt you. The one thing that he'll always talk about as well is that Austin Matthews / Connor Bedard shot. Left-hand shots, okay, shooting off their right foot.
Okay.
He said, what you always talk about, what you do there is, I mean, and all the kids are doing it now. Like every, I mean, you're around the rings. Like how many times you see people, even in warm-up, like they're doing that Bedard-Matthews shot. He said, you have to be really sensitive to one thing. I said, what's that? He said, you're creating a blind spot. You're creating a blind spot to your, if you're a left-hand shot, you're creating a blind spot by shooting off your right foot. You're not open to what's happening to your right side. He said, that's where you're going to get caught. Like, that's a level that Adam thinks on. Okay, where am I making blind spots? Like, he'll break your, totally break your game down and saying, this is where you're putting yourself in a dangerous situation. This is where you're going to get hurt. This is where you're going to get injured. This is where maybe if you're lucky, you're going to get away, you're going to get away with it. But he would look at that and say, you're putting yourself in a position to get injured. Matthews hasn't had the injury because of it. Is it coming? Hope not, but maybe. Ditto Connor Bedard. And ditto pretty much every young hockey player is entering the NHL now who grew up wanting to shoot like Matthews and now shoot like Bedard.
Yeah. The whole conversation like that, I'll tell people, like, go back and listen to it because that little snippet is just one thing.
Adam's great.
That whole podcast that he does with Cannon Strick is fantastic. But it is interesting because he talked about it on that podcast specifically about how, you know, he played contact sports from a young age when he played lacrosse. So he knew about protecting himself from contact from such a young age.
He was a great lacrosse player.
Yeah.
Great lacrosse player.
And I believe he lived in Nobleton at 1.2, so shout out.
Oh, jeez.
But he's, you know, we don't talk enough about Adam Oates as one of the greatest players ever.
He's in the Hall of Fame, bud.
I know, but he doesn't, he's never in that one. When we talk about like greatest playmakers and stuff like that, for whatever, he just doesn't get.
Oh, he's on my list.
He should be.
Oh, yeah.
But he doesn't, a lot of people, I don't want to say he's lost to hockey history sometimes, but it does feel like that because Adam Oates was one of the most elite scorers, elite point getters that we've ever seen.
You know how I also feel about that way?
Who's that?
He was one of the elites of all time and the second leading scorer in the entire 80s when they
Peter Stastny. 100%.
Peter Stastny, Adam Oates. Okay, we got to hit a break here. We're heavy. Quick break back in a couple of moments. Merrick Show, Sportsnet Radio Network, simulcast on 360, wherever you get your podcasts, back in a flash.
The best Blue Jays show out there, period. Blair and Barker. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. This is the Jeff Merrick Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Welcome back to the program. I just got a note from our good buddy Jimmy Murphy. Murph, in his latest piece, Game 6 preview, Brad Marchand's mom says he's playing. This is awesome, I guess. Those WHCH Boston reporter Steve Cooper talked to Brad Marchand's mom, and she said that her son would be playing tonight, Game 6. Quote, he's doing good. He's pumped. He's ready for a big win tonight for the Bruins. And he's excited to get out there and extend the series.
What a hockey mom.
Love it.
I don't know that my mom would ever
just love it.
State that I was playing or not playing. She did yell at me once from the stands playing junior because I was ready to two-hand somebody in the ankle.
Matt, no, what did she call you?
Matthew.
She did call you Matthew. 100%. That's when you know
always,
you're
in trouble. But always, though.
When I got Jeffrey, uh-oh.
Yeah. I don't have a middle name either, so it was kind of like...
When I got Jeffrey James?
Ooh. Yeah, see, I don't have a middle name, so it's... I was always in trouble, I guess.
All right.
Okay.
Mom's the source on that one.
Yeah, that's a pretty good source.
Good scoop.
Okay, so last night, so we talked about the Rangers, talked about Chris Kreider and that great performance in the third period.
By the way.
Yes.
I think the Rangers one day retire his number.
Leading playoff scorer. He's had lots of playoff success outside of a Stanley Cup. He's going to finish as one of the top scorers ever in Rangers history, I would assume.
So 20's going up.
Yeah.
So when it does, last night is one of the games we're going to mention.
For sure.
Hands down. Like watching this one, you're like, I don't know when they're going to retire. I don't know when he's going to retire. I don't know when his jersey's going to get retired, but they're going to be talking about this game.
Especially that one on Freddie Anderson that he just tucked right in by his skate. Yep.
I don't know that he's going to brag about that goal.
Elimination game, Freddie.
That was a tough one.
Okay, so this
okay,
is...
Okay, sorry, I interrupted you.
That's okay. So this is Chris Kreider and Vincent Trocheck, who somebody said Vincent Trocheck is playing the lawyer for Chris Kreider. Yeah. He looks like a lawyer in this video for those that are watching on TV. It's a great clip talking about, like, what was said between the second and third period. Here we go. Okay.
Chris, in between the second and the third, did you say, I think I'm going to get one? And when you got one, did you think that there were more on your stick?
I don't know. I mean, I just think as a group, we raised our level and we started getting pucks to the net.
Hockey answer. Hockey answer.
To get there.
Is that
a
no?
I think he did. I think he did. Ah, there we go.
So yeah. did he say that?
He had, yes, he did say he had one. I'm not sure about the second part of that question, but the first part, yes.
And when he said that, what did you guys think?
I said, I sure hope so.
See, what he should have come back with, and by the way, I don't know if there's anyone happier for this Rangers win than Vincent Trocheck. He is just beside himself
to
knock out the Carolina Hurricanes in the way that they did. What he should have said at that moment is, when Chris Kreider was just trying to do the hockey interview, I don't know, a lot of good guys in the team, you know, it's team effort, it's not individuals, blah, 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 blah. Should have said was, well, what my client is trying to say is, and just gone full lawyer mode.
Yeah, Vincent Trocheck very much looked like, he looked like an Italian mob lawyer is what he looked like, with the slick back hair.
You look like that sometimes.
I do. You're right. Not with this shirt today.
Not with that shirt. No.
It's fun Fridays with these shirts.
There we go.
That's what we're going for.
He is like, I know everyone's thrilled. Rangers fans are thrilled. Players, Peter Laviolette, all of it. Chris Drury. But I don't know that you look at that clip. Like, if you're watching us on 360, you just saw it. If you're listening on the radio, you can find it. Like, it's nonstop smiles.
Yeah.
Like, he can't get the smile off of his face. Like, Chris Kreider is still like
stone faced,
still doing stone face, right? Like, he's Stonehenge.
Yeah.
He's hockey Stonehenge. Trocheck can't stop smiling.
Yeah. He's been like, and the best part about Vincent Trocheck is like, there's one thing to be said about a guy who, you know, I'm playing against my former team and, you know, I played a little bit of a role in it. Like, this guy was front and center this entire series, whether it's pissing off Brent Burns or scoring big goals or making big plays in overtime, like all of that, Vincent Trocheck has been front and center. And what an addition to that team. Like, he allows other players to be great.
Do you have a thought on what we saw at MSG last night? Did you see that?
Which part?
So they're simulcasting the game at MSG.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Kreider scores the hat trick. Fans throw hats on the ice.
That's, I mean,
I get it. Fun, history, tradition. No one's there.
Yeah, no, I'm not wasting a hat.
No one's there.
On that one. I'm not going to find it in the bin after. By the way, I've always wondered about that. Do people steal other people's hats when they go try and get it back?
Let me throw it back at you. Would you?
No.
If you see the band, you say, oh, that's a nicer hat than mine.
No, because I don't know where that hat's been.
Clean it up.
I don't know.
I've seen you.
I'm not good at washing hats.
I've seen you wear some dodgy stuff.
Well, that goes without saying. You don't want to know why. Well, you know why.
What is happening in the... first of all, congratulations to the Rangers. Questions now for the Carolina Hurricanes. If we have time, I want to get to it. But...
You want some updates?
I want a Rupa Hintz update. Because I think that this is, maybe it's an unfair comparison, but, you know, Val Nichushkin is out, stage 3, for the Colorado Avalanche. I think the Rupa Hintz injury is bigger.
For sure. It's the top center.
And he plays
hard minutes for them, too.
And he's a great two-way player.
Yeah.
He'll have sulky votes.
Well, he's out tonight.
Again, eh?
Yeah, according to Pete DeBoer, he is out tonight. Tyler Seguin looks like he will play.
Okay.
Noah Yakov.
He looked bad going off the other night.
Yeah, it didn't look. But at this time of the year, who looks good going off anymore? It's so, like, it's the hardest trophy to win for a reason. Because it is a grind, a physical battle.
Yeah.
And for the Avalanche, Noah Yakov, Trenin tonight.
No big body.
According to Jared Bednar. I really like Trenin, especially because he provides that different element. He's a big, physical guy.
He's heavy and he hits hard.
And he kills penalties.
No.
And last time I checked, that's very important in these playoffs. So that's going to be a really interesting one, and in how Dallas adjusts with no hints. Like, I know he missed the majority. Like, he missed last game, and then there was some thought that maybe he gets in. And Pete DeBoer said, hoping that he's back next game, if there is a next game, or the next round.
Mm.
That screams like he's probably not ready for the next game if there is one.
Don't need to worry about any of it. You know why?
Because they got to play one game first.
Wyatt Johnston.
Yeah, I don't know if Wyatt Johnson's going to get the same type of defensive assignments that Rube Hintz was getting. That's clutch
player.
Look at what Nathan McKinnon did with Rube Hintz not there.
No, I know. Sliced and diced.
It's a different type of game, man.
I know, and Bednar's getting his matchup. They're at home. I get it.
Yeah, it's...
I would not be surprised if this thing goes seven.
I think we would all be happy for this to go seven.
I would be happy for this to go seven as well.
Okay, you want a very ridiculous stat? It's funny. I mean, we never look into this stuff because it's a lot of it's done in jest. But this from Cam Robinson, who's joined this program before.
Yeah.
5-on-5 production this postseason.
Uh oh. Okay.
Nikita Zadorov, 4 goals, 7 points. Connor McDavid, 1 goal, 6 points. And his response was, "Bet you didn't see that coming."
Who had that one?
Yeah, I didn't have that one on my bingo card.
You're a betting man. Would you have taken that?
No, I would not have. But the fact that just speaks to less so what LA did in the first round, because at the end of the day, Connor McDavid still had like 11 points in 5 games. But it speaks to what the Vancouver Canucks have been able to do in this series. Connor McDavid puts up numbers with his eyes closed, mm-hmm. whether it be in the regular season or the playoffs. The fact that they have been able to keep him in check, especially 5-on-5.
Oh, yeah.
And the power play goes 0-for-5 yesterday. I haven't seen them not score a power play goal with an opportunity in the playoffs.
Who was their best penalty killer last night?
Who's that?
In Vancouver, who was their best penalty killer? The guy they tried to run out of town going back to the Benning era. The guy they would call Chaos Giraffe.
Yeah.
Tyler Myers.
Yeah, and that's a really nice redemption story because He was the topic of conversation all the time. How can you create cap space? Well, you have to move Tyler Myers.
Do you?
That was always the conversation.
Rutherford took over. What did everyone think? Oh, that's it for Myers.
Yeah.
They need to make some flex. And Rutherford came out and talked about it. We need flexibility. We need flexibility, et cetera.
And everybody said, well, that's got to be him. But there's something to be said about big defensemen who are also right-handed shots and their value to teams. He's been very good.
And he was excellent last night on the penalty kill.
Yeah.
But Zadorov, I mean, I'm loving the sidebar of Kane versus Zadorov.
Oh, yeah.
I love the fact that Kane just is like, no, I'm going right into him.
Yeah. And Zadorov's like, okay.
All right, let's do it.
You want to dance? Let's go.
Let's do this.
I think it's been a really good series. The fact that, again, every game decided by one goal, that's what you're looking for. You're looking for those tense moments. You're looking for things to be close. You don't want these blowout games. Although Boston and Florida has had a couple of blowout games.
That's been
a lot of fun.
And then there's no one on the bench by the end of the game.
Yeah.
My first experience, did I ever tell you this? My first experience with Nikita Zadorov was at the, would have been 2014 Memorial Cup, the one that London hosted, one that the Edmonton Oil Kings won. They beat the Guelph Storm in the final. And that was a team with, Max Domi would have been on that team. Bo Horvat would have been on that team. Nikita Zadorov, a very young 16-year-old Mitch Marner would have been on that team. Chris Chernyi would have been on that team.
Was Dvorak on that team too?
I don't think so. Dvorak, I could be wrong.
Anyway.
I'm not 100% sure. Anyway, so Zadorov was hilarious because we would go to talk to him after skates and all he wanted to talk about was his Prada shoes. Yeah. Enough about the hockey. How about these shoes? I just got these. What do you think of these shoes?
That's amazing.
Great personality. Super tough. And you always talk about players that do themselves a lot of good in the postseason.
Not even the
postseason. Like, all season long. Like, it's been a real good fit with Vancouver. But you're right. Like, in the postseason, Zadorov's really distinguished himself. And you talk about players that are going to use the playoffs to get paid next season.
Yeah, he wouldn't be the first guy. Speaking of, we got a couple minutes left. You want to do this Carolina? And what the heck is going to happen with that? Like, when I looked, I was stunned to see how many RFAs and UFAs they have. Plus, they got to make a decision on the coach. It's a lot.
I think the coach stays.
I think so, too.
Here's what we're looking for UFAs. So, Teravainen, Gensel. Gensel's interesting Because don't forget, they completely changed their philosophy of what they do at deadline for Guentzel, because they never do rentals.
Mm-hmm.
They made an exception for Jake Guentzel. Jordan Martinook.
Mm-hmm.
I can't see Martinook not playing with.
No, he just, you know, there's something, he just fits there.
He totally fits. Stephen Nason, who's going to be interesting because, you know, he's 30 years old and this might be his first chance to really get a payday.
And so,
and a guy like him is valuable, brings that edge, like a little bit of edge.
And he's tough. and he's got a little bit of scoring ability.
Oh yeah. Teammates love him. Brady Shea, Brett Pesce, Tony D'Angelo, and the very underrated Jalen Chatfield.
Yep.
That blue line could look totally different.
And not one defenseman season. Under contract aside from Scott Morrow after next year. On their, I think,
no, they'll get something done.
No, but as of today, yeah. I'm saying, yeah, I agree.
That's going to be one of the things they have to do in the offseason. They need an extension here for Jacob Slavin.
Yeah.
Like, there's no way. There's no way that they're going to let Slavin.
No.
There's no, just but, like Seth Jarvis is going to get a monster deal.
Yeah. And Brett Pesce is going to, Brett Pesce, a right-handed shot defenseman? Yeah, he's going to get paid. And you know what else? Brady Shea has been nothing but consistent during his time in Carolina.
Let me ask you this. Toronto Maple Leafs.
Yes.
Seth Jones, Chris Tanev, Brett Pesce. One, two, or all three on the Maple Leafs blue line next year.
Boy, oh boy. Is Jones still, how much?
We're going to clip this.
Does Jones
he's got
still?
Term. He's still got
I was going to say, he has
he's
term.
He's still got term, yeah.
I do think Brett Pesce, and I think that Chris Tanev. I was told that he would be very open to, I was told that if he was traded to Toronto at the deadline, he was very open to an extension.
Tanev. Wouldn't surprise.
Yeah.
Local boy comes home.
Yeah.
The interesting one here is Jesperi Kotkaniemi. Listen, things have, how long do we have here? Probably not enough time.
Couple minutes.
Things have not worked out for Jesperi Kotkaniemi and the Carolina Hurricanes.
Mm-hmm.
That was the retaliation offer sheet.
Yeah. How'd that work?
So the Montreal Canadiens offer sheeted Sebastian Aho, and we all went, yes, Bergevin. Someone's using the tools in the CBA to try to make their team better.
And Carolina said, okay, thanks.
Yeah, we looked at the number and we said, that's it?
Yeah. Oh great.
If you're Don Waddell, you're like,
you stopped all my negotiations. Thank you.
You know, Burge, I haven't sent you a Christmas card in a few years, but you're back on the list. Just about, he's going to make you sweat it out for a couple of days here, freeze you from doing business, and then we're going to match.
Yeah.
It's going to be easy and our jobs are done.
And then the Habs, when the Kotkaniemi one was signed.
And then I'm guessing it's the owner is like, all right, retaliation time. Don Waddell, you get a shot at offer sheeting Jesperi Kotkaniemi, you go for it. And Montreal doesn't match. And now here we are with $30 million left on the contract. You're looking at, okay, so he's under 26, so it's a one-third buyout. It's only going to cost you $10 million. You're putting $20 million in your jeans. You're saving $20 million. Do you do it? It's a pretty big indictment on the organization if you do it.
Sure.
But how do you not?
I don't think you have a choice.
How do you not?
Yeah.
Fascinating times. And listen, it'll be a fascinating weekend as well. Also do want to mention tonight, Game 5, PWHL, Minnesota and Toronto in downtown Toronto at Coca-Cola Coliseum. Whoever wins tonight faces off against Boston in the Walter Cup, the PWHL final. Thanks to everyone who took part in today's show. Thanks to Elliot Friedman, Connor McGahee, Liam McHugh as well. Thanks to Matt Marchese, Lance Kennedy, and Jen Rolnick. Enjoy the games tonight. Enjoy the games on the weekend. We're back Monday morning, noon Eastern, 9 Pacific. Have a great weekend.